When it comes to ranking games, I'm always right. But when it comes to other important decisions, I don't always know what to do. So I try to live by a simple rule of thumb. When I'm not sure if I should be doing something, I consider what the world would be like if everyone did it. And if things would be worse, then I know that what I'm considering doing is, in fact, selfish. One of the things that I no longer do is skip boring elections. Not presidential elections, the other ones. State, local, and special elections. Almost everybody skips these, and as a result, only old people and hyper-partisan weirdos end up deciding who makes 90% of the rules that we all have to live by. Boring elections are how we get state and municipal lawmakers. These are the offices that end up deciding crucially important things, such as who gets to vote and who has access to healthcare. Boring elections are incredibly fast and easy to vote in, and because turnout is so low, your vote will have a huge impact. You'll be doing what's best for you and everyone else by going to vote411.org and finding out when the next boring election is and where you can vote in it. That's vote411.org. Tell them Xerxes sent you.
Some, this is painfully obvious, but hardcore gaming means it ain't for the novices. The main source to brain train your knowledge, a lane maintained with a course aimed at colleges. To HG101, we give the honor, thanks to Kirk Alotta, Xerxes, the host of Proper, as well as Satanga, Cal and Bobinator, Ogre Hawk and others, discuss and discover all the 47,000 games, and when they rate them, you can bet it's scientifically locked in position. Speaking of which, no system is obscure, and look, they wrote a book about it, go out and cop yours.
Hello and welcome to HardcoreGaming101.net's Top 47,858 Games of All Time podcast, where we objectively, definitively, and scientifically rank the games that you nominate. My name is Xerxes, and I'm the show's main host and producer, and on this podcast we have three rules. Rule 1, all rankings are final, official, and scientifically accurate. Rule 2, you can nominate one game at a time via 5-star review on iTunes or Stitcher. Those are the ones we try to get to first. You can also go to bit.ly/rankthisplease. And add a game to the slush pile and cross your fingers. We make no guarantees on those. Rule number 3, you can nominate games that have already been nominated, but just don't nominate games you've already ranked. See the master list for yourself. It's at bit.ly/47kgames. That's bit.ly/47kgames.
Dog's power. Hey, dog's power. Hey, dog's power. Hey, dog's power.
Who the hell is Janine?
Hey, everybody, we're back. And guess what we're talking about this time? We're talking, you can't guess. You would never guess. Not in a million years, because we are going to be talking about Takeshi's Challenge, or Takeshi no Tōsenjō, as it was known back in the day in Peru, where it was, Japan, right, correct. Yeah, sorry. It was nominated by the game Rygar on Stitcher.
Rygar is also the name of the person in Rygar.
Nominated by Rygar on Stitcher, which means we had to play it and we had to formulate opinions about it. We have to talk about it and then rank it.
That was a real dick move.
Thank you, Rygar. I feel like I just got like a chain-mounted shield right to my crotch.
Because, of course, if they had have just said, you know, in any other form, like, hey, can you add this to the list to rank? We'd be like, oh, yeah, sure. Well, maybe, eventually.
Eventually. But they did it in a 5-star review on Stitcher, which means we had to rank it as soon as we could. So we did. Takeshi's Challenge was developed by Taito and published by Taito for the Famicom, and it was released on December 10th, 1986 in Japan,
Merry Christmas.
In time for Christmas. So you got your bucket of chicken, and you got your Takeshi's Challenge, and you're ready for action. So who's supposed to be talking about Takeshi's Challenge?
The only other person that was like, yes, I will play Takeshi's Challenge, and I'm Carl, and yeah, I played the translated English version that apparently someone decided that this game was something they were going to translate. They were going to unleash it on all of us.
Yes, and now we have it. So
I was like, you know, maybe if it's not in English anywhere, I'd be like, well, you know, I couldn't play it. I didn't want to play it.
Well, what you would do is the best way of appreciating this game is to watch the Game Center CX episode about it, which is legendary.
It was the inaugural episode. It was the first episode of
It's the worst. And the reason why is because, of course, like the game is it was a Famicom game. It was like early in the Famicom boom, where it's like, we can put out anything and sell it and people will buy it and up your ass because we hate you. It was about like a very popular. It was ostensibly designed by a very popular Japanese.
It's
not really about it, but it's like it was supposedly his idea of Beat Takeshi or Takeshi Kitano's like a Japanese comedian.
Yeah, he's either a Japanese comedian, and shortly after this game, like within the next 4 years, he would also become famous for hyper-violent Yakuza films. So you can...
Yeah,
like... I would argue that this is literally the middle point of his career.
It is. So the thing you would probably best know him for in the United States, anyway, is that... is Takeshi's Castle, right?
Yes.
Takeshi's Castle was later, like, you know, turned into an American reality show of like parody type thing because it was like dubbed over as like, I don't know, Ultimate Extreme Mega Challenge.
Most Extreme Challenge.
Yeah. So it was like
MXC.
It's a popular thing for people who smoked marijuana back in the early 2000s.
Right, you are, Vic. It's actually
no further comment about that.
I will also just flag that I believe it was translated in multiple languages under a similar premise. Like,
yeah,
you know, they dubbed over it in English for MXC, and I believe there's like a German version and possibly Spanish, Italian, probably others, where they were like, hey, this thing is working. Let's dub it in this language without comedians.
Like, it was like an obstacle course. It's kind of like, I mean, right now it's still like, it's probably not as popular as it used to be, but a few years ago in the United States, like American Ninja Warrior was like a very popular thing. It was like, it was basically the same idea. It was like an obstacle course.
Well, there's another show literally called Wipeout, which sometimes gets in your search results when you look for Wipeout game, and it gives you this, it's kind of like British, I think, show. I think we had it in Australia as well, which is like literally Takeshi's Castle, but mostly just, you know, less theming, more hitting people with things. But that's literally the show, you know, your obstacle course, like large obstacle courses that they pit regular people through rather than athletes.
So, yeah, that is what Takeshi's Castle was. It was like extreme obstacle courses you're supposed to try and finish, but the people who competed in this were just supposed to be normal people. So just like normal people who had no particular athletic ability were trying to finish it. If you've seen American Ninja Warrior for our North American listeners, like it's imagine that, except instead of dudes who have trained for years to do this thing, it's just normal, like, you know, like office workers doing it.
Has a hint of Gladiators, if you remember the old.
It's like a little bit of American Gladiators, but also like there was no like antagonist characters. It was just like stupid obstacle courses.
Well, and then antagonist characters in Takeshi's Castle. They had the people in the suits and stuff that ran up and pushed people and that kind of thing.
Oh yeah, that's true. That's true. So anyway,
this game is not related to that in literally any way. By the way,
there was a game based on that.
There's two.
The good thing about this game is you don't have to have a power pad to do it, which just would make the game so much worse.
Although you do need the Famicom microphone.
You do need the second Famicom controller, which has the microphone built into it. Anyway, Takeshi Kitano is a Japanese comedian. He is very, very old at this point. And as you said, he later became famous for doing super violent films. His directorial debut. Violent Cop, yeah. Mm. But then he did after that, which I don't think has a tremendously good reputation, but he did after that Sonatine, which does have a very good reputation, and it is actually very, very good. And did he also do the movie, what was it, Fireworks?
I couldn't tell you for sure. I mean, obviously I know he was in Battle Royale, and that's kind of pertinent because it's the basis for the Battle Royale video games, but that was based on a manga. He was in, is it Hanabe, I think, or something? It's quite a famous one. He was in that, and he just show up in a lot of films. Still, he shows up because he's a famous guy. The more pertinent thing for this game is his career was kind of more started with him as another guy who was called, I don't know, Beat something else. I can't remember his name.
Yeah, Beat Takeshi, I thought.
No, he's Beat Takeshi. There was a second guy, a comedian that he performed with, who took the name Beat, whatever that guy's name was.
It was like
Beat.
A Manzai thing, right?
Yeah, they called like 2 Beat, I think was their like their name. And yeah, they would be like, they kind of braided each other, you know, they would like insult comedians on each other, you know, like they were, you know, that kind of like, they walk in and they like smack talk each other. And that's kind of where this game sort of comes from, is it's quite a, like, a game that, you know, basically does that to you. It's like a belittlement game towards the player. Like, so, allegedly, I want to just mention other part of the history. Allegedly, Takeshi met at a bar while they were developing this game. Like, he heard that he had been licensed for a game by Taito or whatever. I don't know how that exactly works, like how your manager or your... just kind of like sells your likeness to a video game and then you don't know about it and then you hear about it later, but I guess that's how it worked then. But he did this and he basically heard about this and stumbled in and was like, no, I actually have ideas for my game. He hates games, hates technology, hates like super curmudgeon guy. I bet he doesn't own a phone of any real functional usage, but apparently he, you know, he hates tech, but he stumbles in and basically does brainstorm ideas for his game with them rather than just letting them make up a game using his likeness, you know, which is more typical. Right. Whereas he did hear about the game and got in. That whole bar story, which is repeated, I think, in Game Center, and it's repeated quite often, he has denied that. I wanted to mention, this is the main thing, this is literally the only thing I want to mention, is by his account, and I don't know exactly why he would lie about this, since he doesn't seem someone that would lie about this. He says, no, I just, like, met them in a cafe for an hour near my production company at the time. Like, that's what I did. I met a couple of people with my ideas.
According to the developers at Taito, they would meet up with him after work hours when he was incredibly drunk.
Yes, that's their side of the story.
If he did this, he would not remember it. So I think they're both telling the truth insofar as everybody is saying what they remember happening, in that he only remembers meeting him maybe once officially at a cafe when he was sober, but there were other times.
Don't come out
so
later.
According to the developers, who again have no particular reason to lie about this,
but the developers also, none of them really admit to making this game, by the way. Like,
But somebody had to make it. So
someone had to make this game, but the actual credits and production of this game are shrouded in fun mystery where nobody is willing to go on the record about it.
But I believe the developer's account, because that is exactly the kind of game you would end up with. So they said that they would just go out with this guy. He was like, you know, a very famous guy at the time in Japan. And they would go, like, he would be drunk and he would tell them what he thought the game should be. And they had a lot of trouble, they said, making a game out of the stuff he would talk about. But he was like, no, you should be like a salaryman who like gets fired from his job and goes nuts and then like punches people. Basically, I have a feeling that the people who designed the game felt like talking to this man was an incredible chore that they should not have to tolerate. And they felt like all of his ideas were awful, and maybe the only thing they could do out of it was just to make a game that was trolling the player as much as possible. And that's
kind of tricky, because I definitely think that he would want a game that trolls players. Like, I do feel like if Takeshi had an idea, it would be make this game miserable to play. But parts of the game, it does kind of feel, once you play the game, if you are dumb enough to do that voluntarily, it feels incredibly piecemeal. Like, Takeshi presumably presented ideas, and he definitely, I believe it's confirmed, he did present some ideas that were just either could not be done or were unsuitable to the platform. I have no doubt that he probably suggested some pretty, like, awful crap. Considering what's in the game, I get the feeling it would have gone pretty awful.
It's very clear he didn't even know what video games were. You know what I mean? Like, why would he know that? Like, he was probably too old to be playing these games. His idea was just like, this sounds stupid. This sounds like a stupid thing. Like, to him, it's like pitching ideas for like a collection of t-shirts. You know, it's like, it doesn't make any difference to him what it is. Because his whole shtick was like, I'm a wacky guy, I'm going to do wacky stuff.
Also a little mean-spirited. It's important. All this stuff is mean-spirited.
And again, when you see like the movies he's famous for now in the West, like, they're all very violent, dark, depressing films. They aren't funny at all, by the way.
The humor from those is like derived from extreme violence and then like contrast or something. Like, it's not laugh out loud funny. It's like, oh.
Right. So it's very possible. Like, he's just like a masochist or a sadist or something. Like, he just wants to inflict pain on people. So but, what's kind of the stuff that happens in this game? Like,
yeah, what do you have to do? The thing about this game is because it just feels like an idea. And then the developers were like, all right, we have to somehow plug this idea into this idea. Like, everything in this game is barely connected things that you have to somehow, with superhuman effort, figure out what you need to do. The start of the game is you are the salaryman, and what you have to do is not talk to your boss. Do not talk to your boss, because he will give you money. And if you take that money, your wife will later take it, and the game will become unwinnable. That is the level of game that we are playing here, people.
Yeah, it's very much based on, like, it's clearly made in the 80s, back when, like, everybody in Japan had a job, and the job was great, and you couldn't lose the job, and you made money, and then, like, your main pursuit in life was to get ridiculously drunk on a nightly basis, and,
yes, work hard, convert the money into alcohol, and then ignore your wife.
Convert the money into liver disease, and, and ignore your family and suffer the consequences.
Like, that was the thing. And, you know, this is also because, like, this is during the Japanese, like, very big boom period. So everyone was falling ass over into a job, a miserable job that you worked for six-ish days a week. And, it was a horrible time to be an employee in Japan. I also like that the company is losing piles of money in this, and the boss is like, the company's going really badly. You can only have a small bonus this year. It's like, what?
Yeah.
Like, thanks. You still get a bonus, even though, like, the profits.
And like, the stuff you have to do in this game to advance is notorious. It is infamous.
Yeah, like, I mean, like, I'm happy to spoil the puzzles in this because
we don't want our listeners to play the game.
No.
No.
And you cannot solve this. Like, to talk about the, this game did have a strategy guide released. That was a thing. And it was extremely popular because nobody could figure out how to beat the game because it is insane. But unfortunately, the strategy guide was missing parts of the game. So even if you bought the strategy guide, it wouldn't tell you how to beat the game. So it would still remain unwinnable. And there were, people were rightly angry about that. So they released a second strategy guide, which was amended with the correct information to beat the game. And they blamed that the strategy guide, the first one, they blamed the unfinished nature of that strategy guide because allegedly the person that was writing that strategy guide died.
That's so funny.
That's correct. They just, man, they threw the dead guy under the bus. Like,
those wacky humans and their deaths.
Rough stuff with this game.
Never ends with these idiots.
It's a hell of a not a thing you want to play. So basically, it is ostensibly a sandbox game, and I almost like that aspect about it. Like, you actually walk through a few streets in Japan, not really any specific street, but you walk through them. You can beat up anyone. There's no real penalty for that. And
right.
Yakuza guys will come in on the off basis and try and beat you up. You basically have to beat them up. So you're a pretty tough salary man, I would say.
You are. You've got the power of alcohol behind
you. I think it's a bug, but if you crouch and jump, you shoot up like 80 feet in the air, which is a lot of fun. That's the game.
This game. Okay, so we're going to talk about a little bit about the stupid crap you get to do in this game, or you must do in this game. But before we do got to say, there's something about this game. There's kind of a straight line from this game to Shenmue to, like, Grand Theft Auto, Yakuza. Like, there's a direct line from it in a way that is not, like, traditionally when you say there's a direct line from this game to this game, that means this game was inspired this game and this game. Not really. It's more like this game is birthed from the same, like, monomania that possessed people to create other games, you know, like,
yeah, like, Shenmue asked the question, like, what if we had a high detail interactive world that we told a story in? And that was where they sprung from.
And this, what one, if that, like, story went nowhere?
Yeah. And this game almost is exactly the same. It's like, what if you were a salaryman and your goal was to get fired, divorce your wife, learn to hang glide, and then go on a treasure hunt to a cave full of money? That's the game. That is the linear narrative of the game.
The thing is, the whole game unfolds like a rambling story from some drunk asshole, like, who you're stuck sitting next to at some bar, like, after work. He's like, this is Gary from accounting, and Gary's got some, and then what I said was, you ain't finding money? Go get a hang glider, because I don't know where it is, and you're going to have to hang glide, you hang gliding son of a bitch! That's what it feels like. The whole game, like, so, what's probably the most infamous part of this game? We can't possibly describe.
There's, like, 4 or 5 infamous parts that are infamous because they're insane. I mean, the big one actually is that, basically, you have to learn a few things in this game. You go to in the English translation, it's just the cultural center. I can't tell you what it is in Japanese, but it's called the cultural center, and you get a large list of options. You can learn to play, like, 6 different instruments. You've got, like, 5 or 8 different vehicles you can learn to drive. There's some other options. You can learn some languages, and, only 3 of those options are right. Literally anything else, you will lose the game. Eventually. Yeah, it's not straight away.
Yeah, you think that you just keep making choices until you make the right choice. No. Yeah, how this game works. If you make
limited cash. If you spend it on the wrong things, you won't have enough to buy the things that you need. And that includes getting, and you need to get the Japanese guitar, the Shamisen. Yeah. Thank you. You have to get that, but you don't buy it. You don't buy it with money. You have to win it at pachinko. But you don't win at pachinko. This game doesn't let you win at pachinko. It's literally rigged. You cannot win at all. You have to spend a bunch of money on pachinko, and then when the money gets low, you have to yell into the microphone on the other controller a lot. And then Yakuza guys will come in and tell you to stop making such a ruckus, and then you beat them up. And then, and now, only then...
I'm going to kick your ass until you give me a classic medieval Japanese instrument.
And then you win the guitar.
I'm going to kick your ass, you gangsters. In your face. Ooh, ooh, ooh. All right, you win. We're going to give you this shamisen.
That's it. And that is the level that you're dealing with here. And it does this kind of thing multiple times. Also, you have to beat up an old man, or he will show up at the end of the game and steal you beating the game. That is another thing that will happen. There is an old man who gives you a treasure map, and it's, like, implied that you just take it, and he will leave. But if you don't beat the hell out of him, he will show up at the end of the game and be like, "Thanks for finding the treasure for me, dumbass!" And then you get a game over.
And this is why I say, like, I believe the developers account of this, where they're like, yeah, we were just talking to this famous comedian, and he was drunk off his ass, and this is what he told us to do. Because you're imagining this guy just be like, and then, like, you can't get the treasure until you talk to the old man, but here's the thing. Shut up. Here's the thing. You gotta kick the old man's ass. You have to kill this old man, or else at the end of the game, he's gotta come in and take all your stuff.
See, the thing that the thing is, on my end, I'm just like, he almost definitely said this, and then someone who was probably an intern was, like, basically given a list, and the list was...
dutifully taking notes, yeah.
Yes, like, this is, like, the Takeshi's list of suggestions, and remember, this is 1985, 1986, Takeshi is one of the most famous ass people in Japan, and it's like, here is the list of Mr. Takeshi's suggestions, and they're like... All right, I've all got to go in.
It's basically think of it this way. If you're in the 80s in the United States of America, this is like Eddie Murphy's game.
Yeah.
This is Eddie Murphy gives you a game. He's like, here's what we're going to do. We're going to do a game. And this is the thing. Yeah, that's what it is. That's the kind of respect you're talking about. Like, you would respect this guy because he's like the biggest comedic star in the world, as far as you're concerned. And yeah, that's it. So,
and he's funny, so it's going to be funny.
It's going to be funny. Yeah, Eddie Murphy's not going to be not funny, right?
Yeah, like, this is going to be great. It sold 800,000 copies.
Yeah, it did. So the there's the other thing. We got to rank it really soon because how much more can we say about this? I can only fake vomit
one more
time.
Two or three more things, but yeah. You tell me what you're going to say so I don't get
it was. I want to talk about the karaoke part, like the karaoke mechanic, right? So in addition to yelling in the pachinko parlor about losing your money until the gangsters show up and then you kill them, get your instrument. How do you get the karaoke portion of the game? Like, how do you win that?
I mean, the game makes you perform karaoke, and you have to perform it on the microphone. You can kind of, look, honestly, you can kind of fake it out, because you can actually fake the microphone by, like, pressing down A and then A on the second controller. It has, like, a fail-safe, like,
audio input. A debug function, I think. Yeah.
But basically, what it intends for you to do is to sing into the microphone relatively well and on, with good timing, three times. Not once. Three times. You fail any of those times, the game boots you out and kills you. So I hope you're pretty on key with your Japanese karaoke. Otherwise, you will not pass this segment.
You gotta start over.
Yeah, that's the game. So the things I will throw out, two things. One, it does actually do a cute little thing. It's got, you know, between its insanity, you can actually talk to random people in the street, and you do use the microphone again, and they'll just shout out, like, random things to you, which is cute. I think that's nice. You know, it shows a little bit of stuff they didn't have to do but included. I like that. You know, it's a thing. It shows that they were at least thinking about, like, the sandboxy stuff, so I like that little aspect. Mm-hmm. The other thing is how mean this game is. As I mentioned, you have to learn hang gliding to get past a segment. But you can learn, like, four or five other flight vehicles, or, like, you can learn, like, to fly a plane, to drive a boat. I think there's a helicopter. If you take any of those other options, this segment will be hilariously incompletable. Because I think the boat will just end up getting sunk. The plane cannot land on the island that you need to land on, so you will just die crashing into a mountain. And I think the helicopter will just run out of fuel or something on the way. Like, you have to pick the insane, nonsensical vehicle, because otherwise the game will kill you. That's almost, like, that's funny. Like, it's genuinely funny, but it's also like, God damn it, not again. I don't want to play it again. Also, if you punch the guy in the tutorial, on the password screen, you get a game over. The game has one of the fastest, like, start to game over sequences in the universe. You don't even get into the game and you can get a game over. It's not messing around. It's a good game. I'm looking at the bottom of the list right now.
Yeah, scrolling down. I mean, but here's the thing. All right, so I'm going to make a case for putting it as high as we possibly can. Okay. I don't know where that is.
I hear this. I do.
Okay, so what is the most common criticism of, like, point-and-click adventure games, especially the non-LucasArts?
I mean, it is literally this. I mean, I was thinking about that, like, the nonsensical stuff. The main problem with this one is that with most point-and-clicks, not all of them, but most of them, the do the thing wrong and then die is fairly close. Like, you're talking, like, 5 to 10 minutes at most. Right. This game is definitely, like, you can do something wrong and you will die at the end, counting that you get to the end, and there's a lot of back and forth, like, why did I die here? Why did I die here? And you have to keep replaying the game in this insane process of elimination to try and figure it out. Also, no save states, of course. Like, you got a password system, and yeah, if you enter anything, if you enter the wrong password, I believe you get a game over.
It doesn't say, like, wrong password. It's like game over.
Game over. It's much more interesting bad, and that's why I think it's a legendary Kusoge. I've got to slip it in there. I got to use the Japanese.
We would be remiss if we did not mention the Kusoge, right?
Which of course just means shit game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But it's kind of shitty, charming game. Like, that's the implication of saying Kusoge.
So the thing is, right, so this is what people accuse, like, the classic, say, King's Quest games of being.
Yes.
Which is, like, completely arbitrary. Like, the hints don't make any sense, and nothing you do matters. And the only thing you can do is, like, trial and error until you finally succeed and get to the next point, in which case the whole process starts over again. And you're just guessing at what you're supposed to do, poking blindly at the game until you get the right answer. No, like... If nothing else, this game succeeds at putting the lie to that myth, because there is no King's Quest game or any other point-and-click adventure game of that era that is anywhere near as bad as this game.
Yeah,
this is, like, profoundly terrible. But it's so good at being terrible that you almost have to, like, take your hat off to it in a way. Like, this was what we were talking about way, way, way back when... I'm killing time so I can scroll to the bottom of the list because I can't remember what episode that was. We're talking about Super Monkey Daiboken, right?
Yeah.
Where my big selling point for Super Monkey Daiboken was that it was so bad it was entertaining. And, oops, sorry.
Did you just play a drum?
No, I accidentally smacked my microphone stand.
It sounded so much like a drum. You're going to love it.
I can't wait until I edit this episode.
But yeah, I mean, like, Super Monkey Daiboken is of a similar stock where it's just like, this is kind of funny, even though it's awful.
It's, yeah, Super Monkey Daiboken, right, is so bad that it is amusing in that its badness, like, it's almost like a dare you make to yourself, like, how bad can this get? How much, you know, this game is so much worse in a way because... there's no unifying theme to it. Whereas, like, Super Monkey Daiboken, like, there's no good gameplay there. It's just a baffling ordeal, but it's a consistently baffling ordeal.
It is trying to be some sort of action RPG thing. Like, it's trying to be something. This is like, yeah, as you said, like, it's a salaryman simulator that plays in no way like anything that you would expect anything to play as. In that way, it's incredibly forward. Like, it's... to, like, because, you know, this is an idea that I think you would kind of think people would have been hashing out a little bit later, maybe. Because it doesn't feel like, you know, you have some early art games, and I see people bring up Frankie Goes to Hollywood or whatever on the Commodore 64 as, like, you know, these life sims. Like, this is kind of a life sim in that way, but it's also just kind of more of a life sim. To make a life sim and then make a joke life sim is really crazy to think about. In 86 context, like, what is, like, Tower of Juraga? Was that this year as well? Like, there's, like, some games that are, like...
86, I think Tower of Juraga might predate it. The thing is, like, Tower of Juraga was, like, it was a game with a bunch of weird esoteric concepts and rules and things and stuff.
That's why I'm bringing
advanced.
It up.
But it was designed around that. The idea was that you would figure it out and then you would tell other people about it. And the word would gradually spread about how to finish the game. This one
is intentionally
no
impossible.
Plan behind it. Right. Like the only plan behind it is we got to finish this. We like licensed this famous comedian. We got to make a game based around him because he's so damn popular. How can we not? And oh my God, how can we possibly make a game? Like the instructions he gave us are unbelievably bad. Like, he doesn't understand what games are. He doesn't understand who plays games, why they play games, how much do games cost. He doesn't know any of this information. This is what he came up with, and yet we're compelled to do it because we're like low man on the totem pole, like Japanese game developers in 1985, 1986. We just do what we're told.
You know, like, maybe he wants people to not play video games. Like, you don't even know. Like, maybe he's trying to make it so bad that people stop playing video games. That's the kind of level that you're feeling here. I didn't mention this, but I did actually want to mention this. There are two ads for this game that played on Japanese television, and both of the ads actually contain hints to beat the game, which is interesting.
That's right.
Like, one of them does basically say you have to use the microphone to play the game, and I think the other one... hints at how to solve one of the puzzles, I think, which is interesting. The only reason I mention that is, does that mean that someone on the dev team was trying to actually make the game completable? Were they trying to hint about how you can actually finish it and it got out of hand? Like, this is way too hard. Or was this just some sort of small mercy that they were trying to insert into the
advertising media? I think it's the latter. They were just like, people are going to hate us for making this game. We've got to find a way of marketing its terribleness. And that's what they did.
Doesn't the game have on like the box, like, watch out, this is not your ordinary game.
Don't try to use like normal gameplay techniques to finish this game. They will not work because this game is basically just a huge joke. So the other thing about the game, I guess that you could say, to put it in the best possible light, is that, I mean, it is, yeah, it's a gag, right? Like, it's just trying to mess with the player. The fact that they even use the Famicom microphone on the second controller is, in a way, its own joke, because already, as of 1986, the Famicom had been out for, like, what, 2.5, 3 years at this point?
Yeah.
And almost no games used the microphone. Like, it just was not used. It didn't do anything.
It wasn't responsive enough to do anything.
And no, it couldn't. Like, you could just, like, say whatever you want, just, like, blow into it. And that, in fact, that's what, like, you know, the Zelda games, like, they say, like, you know, such and such hates noise, right? So what they mean by that is that if you're playing the Japanese game, you're supposed to blow into the microphone, and it will hurt those enemies. In the North American game, there is no microphone, so it does nothing. And yet the game has a whistle, so North American players were thinking, like, oh, here's what we're supposed to do, is we're supposed to blow the whistle. It does nothing. And you're just like, why can't I hurt these guys? But yeah, like, nothing used that microphone. It was never used.
Yeah, like, making that, like, a punchline in unto itself.
A huge part of the game is, like, you have to scream into the microphone in order to get stuff to happen so you can finish the game, is it's just profoundly masochistic, you know, like, thing to do. I don't know, whatever. All right, where do we want, like, we got to put it somewhere.
So, I mean, the way I look at it, like, the very bottom of the list is, I think, too low, unless we're trying to basically be boring.
No, I don't think so. Like, I gotta say, like, it's a game, like, it is a bad game. Don't get me wrong, right? It's terrible. Like, you're, but I wouldn't say you're wasting your time to play it, because you really do got to see how arbitrary and stupid games could get at this time. And also, just to understand, this is a game that cost a lot of money.
It cost
new.
Money, and I
it
believe
cost real money. It wasn't like
you
a
can
joke.
Still buy it nice and cheap in Japan if you want to go and
there's
buy
a lot of them
this game,
because they sold like 800,000 of them.
And weirdly, people don't want to complete their collection with this game. So, like, as far as like the bottom of the list, like, the Fabulous Wanderer is literally incompletable. So, you know,
yeah,
whatever.
Chiller
is crap. Like,
Chiller is a game that you just, like, you are, like, destroying your own soul by playing it.
Yeah. We've never really cared for the Uncanny X-Men. I mean,
garbage, yeah.
At least this one is a license, so they've got a comparable point there. But, you know, nobody cares about Uncanny X-Men. We could just stay there.
I would put it, okay, so here's my pitch. I would put it above Super Monkey Daiboken, because I feel like Super Monkey Daiboken is amusing by how terrible it is, but at the same time, it is genuinely terrible. In a game that was not intentional. They were just like, nobody was trying to make a terrible game. Whereas with this game, at least one person was trying to make a terrible game. That is the person who inspired the game.
Daiboken is basically like the most interesting part, because I remember, because I find it incredibly interesting, is that the game's overworld that you literally cannot see is the shape of like China. Like, that's, to me, that's the most interesting thing.
That is kind of cool, yeah.
But that's it. Like, everything else is just kind of bad, and the music's kind of catchy. This one is, like, the amount of just crap that they throw at the player. Like, every time you sort of would have thought the game had ran out of just crap to drag you through, yeah, it's like, oh, by the way, punch. Like, it just finds new ways.
It's a game that punishes you for not killing an old person. Like, it's like, no, you should kill this old man, because he's gonna ruin the ending for you.
And if you want to know the ending, because I'm gonna reveal a little bit of it, just like the ultimate sucker punch, just like the infamous sucker punch at the end, where you finally beat the game and it gives you like no ending. Basically, it's like, congratulations, like, really thing. But because they knew what they were doing, you wait 5 minutes. That's a whole 5 minutes. That's five real time minutes. The game's ending screen will progress, and Takeshi's, like, face will, I believe, show up if it's not already there. And he will basically say, why are you taking my game so seriously? Like, he shows up to basically mock you for trying to and successfully beating his game.
And you know that was his idea. It's like, here's the thing. You finish the game, and then there's, like, no reward. But wait a second. Like, if people are stupid enough to just leave their machine on and just stare at their TV for, like, I don't know, like 5 minutes, I want my face to appear, and I'm going to say, like, what's your problem, dude? You like, know what I mean?
Because that shows so much mean-spirited thought, and that's something special. And I agree, like, Sonic the Hedgehog 2006, which is the one immediately above, that game tries to be good and has... You can find a way to enjoy parts of that game, and I would be hard-pressed to put a game that is so impossible to enjoy above it. Like, this one is really funny to hear about or to make other people play it.
Yeah,
so,
you've gotten the best possible experience from this game just by listening to somebody talk about it.
So thanks a lot, Rygar, for making us play it.
That's where it goes, right below Sonic the Hedgehog 2006, right above Gonzo Sayuki Super Monkey Daiboken. Thanks, everybody. And we apologize, but hey, guess what? We saved you the trouble. And now I guarantee you, anybody who thought this was funny is going to try and play it, and then they will be like, no, they weren't joking. This is a bad idea.
No, I'd never played this before. I was like, I'm going to go in. You know, I got to play it. This is it. I'm doing it. And I'm like, okay, yeah.
Yeah.
It's
yeah.
bad.
It was really a bad, bad. Idea.
Even
okay.
The controls are bad.
Hey, everybody, you got like 40-some minutes out of it. I mean, what else can we say? Like, we did the best we could. Hey, don't nominate games like this, okay? Please.
Seriously. Do it some more.
Don't do it. Don't do it.
That's all for this episode. Special thanks goes out to our lovely co-hosts and compatriots, our theme song MC Norm, check him out at Normally Retro on Twitter, and our technical assistant, video editor, and scriptwriter, Ed Burns. You can support this podcast by making a small monthly donation at patreon.com/HG101. I know, I did. By subscribing to the HG101 YouTube channel, and by following at GC9X and at HG_101 on Twitter. You can also hang out with us at our Discord channel. It's at bit.ly/HGDiscord. But most importantly, help us spread the love of games by getting on iTunes, subscribing to HG101, and giving us a 5-star review. Do it because you like us and you want us to succeed. Until next time, keep keeping it real.